Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast, the only podcast out there with a cardio for those deep water championship rounds. I am Mags, and I am joined with my son, Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
I'm brilliant. Good, just after watching that amazing UFC card. That was absolutely spectacular.
It certainly was, and with it being such a massive card, and the first one, first number pay-per-view, I believe, on ESPN1, so pretty much anyone could watch it at lunchtime in the States, thought we might need a third voice here on Five Rounds. Someone who's a renowned MMA expert will put us definitely in the shade and really kind of give a kind of analytical look at the event. It's my wife, Carlos's mum, Lorraine. Lorraine, how are you?
The UFC expert.
Absolutely fucking not.
Straight away with the swearing. That's brilliant. We're a classy podcast here, please. No fucking swearing.
Try and keep it clean.
So, yeah, how excited are you for... I know you've been on Five Rounds before, but this is the first time you really broke down a UFC event with us. So how excited or nervous are you?
Listen, you keep bringing me into these events, and I don't know why, because I don't know absolutely nothing about it. So, crack on.
Okay.
I mean, that might be the reason.
Yeah.
Possibly.
So let's get into the results. Getting the prelims. It was a jam packed event. So many fights. So we started in the flyweight division.
Can I just say something though? I don't know the names.
Okay.
Don't.
We'll guide you.
Ask me to even pronounce them.
We will guide you.
So think before you speak.
Yeah.
That might be hard.
So we started in the flyweight division. Tagir Ulenbekov picking up the decision against Alan Nascimento.
Who?
Then in the middleweight, you just be quiet in this part. In the middleweight, we have Andre Petroska getting the third round sub against Yao Zonghu. Leon Murphy in the featherweight got a really big win over Makwan Amirkane with a second round knockout.
Leon, I didn't hear anyone with Leon.
And then Mikhail Alexeychuk in the light heavyweight division got the first round KO of Shamil Gamzatov. Controversial decision in the welterweight division with Elazu, Zaleki Dos Santos and Benoit Saint-Denis. In fact, the referee who stopped and started this match multiple times, he was actually pulled from the rest of the card.
Which was deservedly. Like, if no one watched the fight, like, when a ref stops a fight for use like an eye poke or something like that, the doctors come in. And he didn't do that, and that was the biggest...
Even though Saint-Denis was saying, I cannot see.
Yeah, I cannot see, and that was the biggest reason. Even though there were a handful of stuff, the L's that he did wrong, that was the biggest reason, and you could see Mark Goddard as the leading official absolutely fuming at the side of the octagon.
Daniel Cormier made it clear to the official from the UAE MMA Federation that... He can't ref any more matches.
Well, he tweeted out, like, as he was speaking, he literally put a tweet out to Daniel Cormier, basically saying, like, I know it's an hard job and that, but Jesus Christ, like, that's... Like, in layman's terms, he basically said, that's some amateur bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like, you shouldn't be doing that in a professional bout, especially as an official, when you're in there for the fight of safety. So he was rightfully pulled from the rest of his duties on the card.
So then going back to these prelims in the middleweight division, we had Albert Duryev getting the decision against Roman Kopylov. Then in the featherweight division, Zubaira Turkugov got the decision against Ricardo Ramos. And then the featured prelim, the only female fight on the whole card, Amanda Ribas getting the decision against Verna Yandiroba. So let's get into the main card. Now, I didn't catch a lot of the first fight because I was on pulling double duty doing a live stream of Radio Techers, Man United and Tottenham, so I've got to check that out in the archives or on Radio Techers on YouTube. It was Magomed Ankalaev looking to push for a lightweight title shot, taking on Volkan Uzdemir. So for you, Lorraine, Ankalaev was in the black. And Volkan had the red shorts on. Carlos, let us know how this fight went down.
So as a stepping stone for Ankleyev, you can. It was a perfect fight for him to accept a high-ranked and high-named opponent in Volkan. Volkan? That's because you're here, that. I know the names of the athletes, and I'm still getting them wrong. Because in my head, I'm like, I can't wait for them to say, you're going to get them wrong. It's making it me go wrong. Either way, Ozdemir, a high-ranking opponent, he were able to, in this fight, I can at least say, take a crack. Because that's exactly what he did. He was just outmatched. The skill set of Ankleyev was just too much. The pressure was too much. His jab, he was using that perfectly, not only just to feint, but to set it up, and then for that perfect cross to come straight behind it. Ozdemir couldn't do absolutely nothing about it, bar from just take the cracks and sort of weather the storm. In the first round, his head movement was on point, his footwork was on point, he was moving well, but as the fight went on, you could just tell that he just couldn't deal with the pressure. The pressure was just kept on coming and coming and coming, and it were either on the back pedal trying to counter, or every time he went to push for an attack of his own, he was just getting basically attacked back, like I said, with a jab. And even though it went to decision, and a lot of fights that go to decisions, usually a bit of like a snooze fest in the heavier weights. So obviously, they carry it over a certain amount, 205 pounds plus. So you're going to get a bit more tired coming into the later rounds. But in this fight, all three rounds were just basically touch and go. And Ankleyev picked up the decision. It was fair. No one can argue that he did not win that fight.
No, totally agree. I caught the last part of the second round and all of the third round, but I saw the highlights from the first round, and the knockdown in the first kind of just set the stage for what was going to happen in the rest of the fight. These Russians and Dagestanians, they're a different breed. Ozdemir is kind of like a gatekeeper now, I think. We've seen him kind of face the top contenders, and he always seems to fall short, but Ankleyev just absolutely dominated him all the way through. And then when we get the cut in the third round over the eyebrow, that Jesus Christ, you could literally see the bone underneath the cut. It was absolutely brutal. But this was like surgery. This was Ankleyev just picking apart Ozdemir, just doing everything apart from getting the finish, which I bet he's absolutely kicking himself over.
Well, to be honest with you though, you could be, but like I said, with Ankleyev, he took the step up in this fight against a top level opponent. Like when we say gatekeeper on this podcast, we don't give that title to a lot of fighters. It's usually a fighter that's been in the game a long time, who's well experienced, who just for some reason just can't pass that last hurdle. But if you're in a fight against him, you know that you need to bring your A game, because it's going to be one of the toughest fights you bring. And Ankleyev shown that he were able to match the skill set what's necessary to push forward in that light heavyweight division.
Yeah, totally, I agree. Lorraine, your thoughts? I know you started taking notes at the beginning, and then kind of like we got engrossed into the fight, I suppose. But I know you said something about Ozdemir got knocked the fuck down. Was that one of your notes?
Well, yeah, but you told me not to swear, so what am I supposed to do?
Only first minute or so.
You opened up with a swear. Like,
listen, it were a boring...
It's just so that like our content don't get
it was boring.
Out, you know? It were boring. There were no proper...
What do you mean
rolling.
It were boring?
There were no proper scrapping.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've got a casual.
Yeah.
We've got a casual. Get out. In fact, wrap this up. We end off. End of it.
I disagree. I think that
you can, but he got his eye split open.
That
was probably the juiciest part about it.
Brilliant.
So not the knockdown, not the feints, not the setup, not the foul.
So we'll go to the second fight. I think you were more into this fight than you were the first one.
These the two young'uns.
So this is Hamzat Chimaev.
Oh God,
here we come
again.
Taking on Li Jingliang.
Lee.
Just Lee.
Obviously we all know that Chimaev is the new golden boy of UFC.
Absolutely.
And he absolutely proved it in this. I mean,
Now that was a fart. That was a proper fart.
It was 3 minutes, and a fart is a stretch.
It was 3 minutes of someone who should have been arrested after the fart, basically.
Yeah, even brawling, they were proper scrappy.
The thing with Chimiev is he's not only a farter, he's entertaining, and he went into this fart in his whole career, which was 9 farts. He had only been hit in the face twice. Actually, in the UFC, he's only been hit in the face once. He left this fight and only been hit in the face once.
And
he didn't take one shot in this fight.
I'm pretty sure his significant strikes is about,
it's now 254-2 in
his career. And he doesn't have cauliflower ears either.
No one can't punch him. He's been hit twice in 10 bouts.
We start the fight, though, with Chimiev going for a deep takedown and ends up just carrying Lee and talking to Dana White at the same time, carrying Lee over to the corner where Dana White was.
That was funny.
Yeah, basically just wrestle-fucked Lee for 3 minutes. He was talking to his cage, he was looking at his corner team whilst wrestling, talking to Daniel Cormier, winking at Daniel Cormier. And then when his team said, lock in the hooks, lock in the submission, he's like, okay, boss, did it, got the submission, fair play to Lee. He didn't want to tap, and he didn't end up tapping, but what he did do is he went fast asleep. He was absolutely knocked clean out. So, Lorraine, was this the best fight for you?
Yeah, definitely. It was well better than the first one, better than the others as well. But that one, was really good.
Carlos?
Yeah, as soon as he picked Lee up, I thought he was going to go for a German suplex. But then when he took him over,
I thought he was going to throw him. Yeah. I literally thought he was just going to throw him.
He was bear hugging when he was like,
Yeah, and then goes down and has a little chin wag with Dana and makes a cup of tea. That just takes a piss out of her. Give it to Lee. You can't look yourself down. It's Chimiev. Everyone who's come across him has just been absolutely mauled.
Yeah.
The guy's just on a different level. And I personally, I thought with all of the shit he had going on with COVID and all that,
I thought that could have affected him.
Yeah, and I'm glad it's in the past now, and it just seems to have, in a way, made him stronger. He knows how to fight. He's a well-rounded. He's definitely just a well-rounded fighter, and not only being, I'm guessing. Correct me if I'm wrong. He is originally from Dagestan, isn't he?
No, he's from Makhal Chaka Kala in Russia, I think.
I do know he went to Ireland, though. He went to go and try and scrap with Conor McGregor.
He got arrested by the
special forces. And Conor McGregor had to call the police, and then because Conor McGregor is a soft cunt who would get his ass whooped by him.
Sorry, listeners.
I mean, I disagree with the soft cunt part, but...
I think Hamzat beats him.
Yeah, Hamzat definitely whoops his ass, but I don't think he's soft. He's held 2 belts at UFC simultaneously.
So great victory for Hamzat, and then we go into what I thought was the worst fight on the card by a long, long way. Marcin Tybura and Alexander Volkov. All the talk from Volkov's camp was he didn't feel he put in enough effort in his recent push for a title shot, that he was slow, the fight with Cyril Gagne, he felt he let himself down and he was going to up their tempo. He did exactly the same thing here against Marcin Tybura. The only problem is Marcin Tybura is nowhere near on the level as Cyril Gagne. So he was handily beat, but this fight was just a fucking snooze fest.
Mm. Definitely.
Is that the one that I nearly fell asleep to?
You were fading. You were absolutely fading. It was the really tall Russian guy.
The bigger people.
That's the perfect example of what I literally just said about these heavier divisions when they go to heavier divisions when they go to decision. They haven't got the cardio to basically uphold the what's necessary for the big frames.
And you can expect that from Tybura because he's carrying a little bit of wood on the porch. But Alexander Volkov, he looks slim. I mean, he's quite tall for a heavyweight anyway, But he just has no cardio whatsoever. At the end of like the first round, he was sucking in oxygen. By the end of the second round, his shots had no power behind them because there was nothing there. Tabura, for how chubby he is as a fighter, now he doesn't look like your typical MMA star. At least he had a little bit of cardio and was landing heavy shots. But yeah, Volkov, he got the victory. Two of the judges actually gave him all three rounds, which I thought was a bit ridiculous.
No.
I thought that second round Tabura was way stronger.
You could give it. Yeah, you could probably give it a take, but judges giving him all three rounds, I couldn't really argue with. He did, if anything, push the pace a little bit more. Yeah, he didn't have that energy to actually finish the attack off, get a TKO, get a submission. Tabura can take a crack, but as well with him, he's an average fighter. You can just tell that he's got the overhand powers. That's it.
But the issue is that these are both top 10 fighters in the UFC. They've got Volkov as 5 and Tabura was 7, which that's ridiculous. Compared to some of the fighters, some of the levels of fighters we've had in that heavyweight division, to say these are two top 10 fighters, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, definitely. You, like they always say, it only takes one hit in the heavyweight division to basically put you in with a winning chance of winning the fight. And in this, they didn't have the power behind the shots to basically have that one punch chance in the heavyweight division that everyone says. Don't matter how big your skill set is, when you've got 220 plus pound behind your fist that you're throwing, you're going to do some damage. And these two didn't seem, they were absorbing more shots than they were actually letting off.
I mean, the one good thing of Volkov is he stuffed so many takedowns. I think it was 13 out of 13 he stuffed, which against Cyril Gagne, obviously, and against Curtis Blaydes, he had absolutely no chance. But a win's a win. He'll take it. And Tabura,
yeah, but that's what I mean about Tabura, though, with him shooting him for the takedowns all the time, with him just being an average fighter, he's only got that big overhand, and if that doesn't work, he's got the takedown attempts that, because he hasn't got the cardio to actually get the techniques off properly. Even Daniel Cormier, you could tell he was somewhat laughing underneath his breath every time we were trying to shoot him for a takedown, because on one of the first times he tried to take him down, he basically collapsed under his own weight and Volkov just like fell on top of him.
Yeah.
So it was just like, stop doing that. Yeah. Try to get back to your feet.
It was pretty embarrassing. So let's go into the people's main event. The one that Hasbullah went to specifically to watch, Islam Makhachev taking on Dan the Hangman Hooker. And we'll go to you, Lorraine, first. This is the one of the fights that you thought was actually really entertaining, the one where Hooker had his arm trapped behind his back by Islam, and the one with the Hasbullah, the dwarf on Habib's shoulders. What did you think of this fight?
That real well good fight, so much better than the others. One of probably the best fight.
Okay, Carlos.
Well, what can you say? Makhachev does what Makhachev does. He's showing that he's. He might not like people saying he's the next Khabib, but he's showing why he's getting.
He
yeah, why people are saying that. He's been able to go into the fight against a tough opponent and put on a spectacular show. As soon as they basically started clinching up against the cage, Makhachev knew exactly what he wanted to do. As soon as he got hold of that wrist, Dan Hooker knew with his own experience, because like you were saying earlier, he's no slouch on the ground. He knows exactly what's basically coming. Like you were saying, it's like a chess match sometimes. You know your opponent's next 5 steps, but Makhachev's just showing that he's that good that he'll tell you his next 5 steps, but there's nothing you can do about it. Dan Hooker tried to defend that Kimura perfectly, dropping down, trying to bury his arm basically into his own body, but Makhachev were able just to beat him up a bit, loosen him up, and in a way make him forget about the defence of the Kimura. And as soon as he got it into the rear naked, the choke to the arm is what I like to call it. And as soon as he stepped over, that fight was over at that point. Dan Hooker knew, and he knew if he didn't tap, his arm just would have got destroyed from elbow joint to shoulder joint.
Yeah, and the thing with Makhachev and the Dagestani kind of a way of competing is it's almost like you're fighting two people at once, because you're fighting the person who is in front of you, face to face, punching you and trying to distract you. But that person's legs are also like another human being, doing things that legs shouldn't be able to do. I mean, the way he trapped Dan Hooker's leg to get the takedown, wrapped around it, and then forced Dan Hooker out of the half butterfly that he was in to kind of, like I said, to distract Hooker away from thinking that the Kimura was on. So as soon as he let that guard down, Islam switched control, and then just went straight for that Kimura, locked it in place. Such a talented fighter, and you can't kind of complain when people are ducking him, because he's a fucking scary bastard.
Yeah, definitely. He's a nightmare for anyone in that lightweight division. And like Daniel Cormier said a couple of years ago, the kid's only getting better. You said he turned 30 not long ago. Mm-hmm. He's only getting
this
better.
It was his birthday week this week. Him and Glover Teixeira, I think the birthdays are either on the same day or the day after each other.
Oh, fair enough. Well, that's it. He's just turned 30. Not even in his prime yet, in somewhat of a way. And you can just absolutely... He's just going to be a killer. Well, he's already a killer in that weight, and that's why people are ducking him. Mm-hmm. And like Daniel Cormier was saying, if you duck him for long enough, you're only going to have to fight him when he takes the belt, and he will take the belt at some point, because he's in the gym working on his skill set day in, day out. So if you're not fighting him, he's in the gym working on what he's going to beat you with, just because you don't want to fight him. And he'll get being ranked 7th now and going up to 5th after beating Dan Hooker, he'll get a title shot off that, because the UFC will look at him and go, buzzing, we've got a cash cow here. Not only can he stand and fight, he's also amazing on the ground as well. He's a well-rounded package. He's an entertainment. He's an entertaining fighter, like we were on about with Makhachev earlier. He's a well-rounded package for someone in the welterweight division. And the people coming from out of like Russia and them sort of areas of the world, they're just taking over the sport.
Absolutely, they are. It's brilliant to watch, especially from that Eagles gym and from American Top Team and their links to the Dagestani fighters. Just how many amazing talents coming out of that little corner of the world. I mean, you look at Bellator and the amount of amazing Dagestani fighters they've got there. I mean, fighters who weren't even on this card, like Magomed Sharipov, brilliant fighter, superb fighter. Usman Nurmagomedov, absolutely superb. Yeah. So, yeah, they're taking over the MMA world.
Yeah, and as well, the other thing that makes it so difficult to fight these fighters like Islam is they speak a totally different language, a language that is not commonly spoken around the world. If you're from Russia, you'll speak it, but if not, you don't understand what they're saying. And a good amount of things in the octagon sometimes can work with you is when you can understand the language of your opponent's coach. Because when your opponent's coach is shouting out commands to their own fighter, that like you can
combat it. Yeah,
yeah, you can combat straight away. If you're quick enough to actually react to what they're saying to their fighter to do, you've got somewhat in with a fighting chance. But these Dagestanians, they know what they're gonna do. You can't stop it. You can't understand what the corner's telling them, and because you've got so much going on, you're also finding it difficult to basically listen to your own corner. And with it being out of COVID and the fans being back and all that sort of stuff, the arenas are absolutely electric, especially when these Dagestanians are fighting.
Cause, I mean, they loved them over in on Yaz Island.
Well, that's it. In Abu Dhabi, when has there not been a card in Abu Dhabi yet that has not been jam-packed with Dagestanian fighters?
Exactly.
They love them over there. Yeah. And as soon as... You can't hear nothing when you're in the octagon and absolutely fighting. So that's one of the other things that makes it difficult, is fighting one of these Dagestanian fighters.
Yeah, I totally agree. So let's get into the co-main event, the first title match. For the interim bantamweight, Petr Yan looking to get back into wearing gold. Obviously, we know that he lost the title in controversial circumstances with the very illegal knee to Aljamain Sterling, who has been injured or ducking, whichever camp you look at in the rematch. So Corey Sandhagen stepped up, and we've got an interim title match. And interesting that it was Corey Sandhagen when he is coming off the loss to Jake the Snake, TJ Dillashaw. But it is what it is. And I personally thought Corey Sandhagen gave a really good showing of himself. The judges and you guys both think that it was 4-1 to Jan, and I can understand why. But for me, I thought that Corey's volume kind of tipped it a little bit more, so I thought it was a bit closer than perhaps a lot of people thought. Especially in that first round, I thought he used his range to great effect, was able to keep Jan at bay, landing not heavy shots, but certainly landing a good number of shots. Jan was getting a lot of success in the body kick, so coming into the second, Jan found his range a lot better. Still a very tight round, but for me, I thought that maybe Corey took that second round, but I can understand why people would have thought that Jan did with the heavier shots. Not the same amount of output in terms of numbers, but certainly a lot heavier, especially when it was following that that body kick up with some of those big lefts. Third round, I thought that's where Jan really kind of blossomed. We know that he's got cardio for days. This guy could probably fight 10 rounds and not even break a sweat. Same with Corey Sandhagen, to be fair, but I do feel he flagged a little bit, especially in the fourth when Jan was just on him all the time. In the fourth, we saw that knockdown with the spinning back fist, which Jan had tried a couple of times and not quite made contact. Did in the fourth, and it was pretty brutal. Fifth round, I thought that Corey was kind of getting back to more what happened in the first couple of rounds. He was able to avoid a lot more of the Jan's attacks, land again the volume but not the power. So the judges all give it 4-1 to Petr Jan. I personally think Petr Jan won. I think it was a lot closer than 4-1 though. Lorraine, I know you said that you thought this fight was boring, and as a casual fan, that's understandable because there's no knockouts or there's no brutal finishes. But Carlos, what did you make of this fight?
I thought it was a good fight to watch, especially with the circumstances where it should have been Sterling actually fighting, and in my opinion, ducking Petr Jan. He don't want to fight him, especially tweeting straight after the fight.
The minute the fight finished.
Yeah, like, basically, congratulations, you've earned this ass-whooping, I'll see you soon. Like, you could have seen him tonight.
The ass-whooping, he was the one getting his ass-whooping.
Yeah, without the controversial finish and him basically taking that belt home.
I agree with the finish, yeah, it was an illegal nick.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't think titles should probably swap hands in that. I think the title
should have been I believe, obviously, with the rules, it should have been a no contest, but how far the fight actually went, that's how they had to determine it, disqualification, he took the belt home. But, yeah, even in that fight, he was getting his arse handed to him by Petr Jan, and Petr Jan coming into this fight, if you're a Petr Jan fan and you've been watching him fight for years, you know in the first round or two, he somewhat gives it away to try and read you, to try and get what you're bringing to the table, so he has the chance to basically beat you near enough every time. He does. He's able to read his opponents well and take them into the later rounds and actually beat them there. And this is exactly what he did to Corey Sandhagen. He basically gave up round one, understood that Corey Sandhagen's not really bringing much to the table bar from like a dynamic movement like we've seen when basically Dominic Cruz were on top, switching stances, going from left to right, doing them popping shots. Now, I guarantee he's probably got that snapping shot behind him where there's no power there, but you do feel it when he hits you. But Petr Jan, he didn't have that much head movement in this fight. He was just able to absorb the shots that Corey were giving to him. And the most majority of the time, he were taking him. And I've said time and time again on this podcast, when you're the smaller fighter and you're fighting the guy with a much longer reach than you, you're going to have to take a crack to get one off. It's just... I like to call it the way of fighting law. If you're a smaller fighter, odds are you're going to get cracked going in.
Yeah.
The guy's longer. Yeah. They're going to see it coming. They've got more of a chance of being able to hit you on the way in. And that's exactly what Corey were doing. But he wasn't hurting him. He wasn't doing absolutely nothing. He was just doing his fancy movement, I think he only did the flying knee, which he's known for. I think he only threw that like three or four times within the full 25 minutes.
Yeah, the closest as well was the one at the very last minute where he threw with about 5 seconds to go.
And which hit Petr Yan clean and did absolutely nothing to him. Mm-hmm. So just goes to ask, would it have done, basically, is that efficient against Petr Yan? Because you threw it a couple of times because you didn't set it up right, you couldn't set it up right. He were able to block, and he keeps his hands so far up. With him being a boxer, a lot of people, he was taking some nasty body shots. Corey Sandhagen was doing brilliant in the first round to work that body, and he just lost it. We're going into the later rounds, he just started to fade with the pressure of Yan, the power of Yan, and I believe in Corey's head, you could somewhat understand why he won the fight, even though he knew he weren't the better man. In his head, I guarantee he thought, I won that fight, I did so much. Mm-hmm. With him moving about the octagon and basically picking the shots off. But if I were the judge in that fight, and I guarantee this is what the judges were seeing in that fight, they were seeing Petr Yan controlling the centre of the octagon a hell of a lot more. Shots landing of Petr Yan doing a hell of a lot more damage.
Yeah.
Corey Sandhagen just basically moving in and out, making Petr Yan miss, not really doing anything else. Absorbing shots, and the shots that he was giving was doing absolutely nothing, so Petr Yan wasn't taking a back foot, he was just on the move from forward, from the go. He wasn't setting his shots up right, and he wasn't doing, in a way, his spinning elbows, which he's able to get off perfectly. He wasn't doing anything in his arsenal that, bar from just trying to make it a dogfight against Petr Yan. Mm-hmm. But Petr Yan has got that much of a boxing background that if you turn it into a dogfight, he's going to win. Especially being the shorter fighter as well, because when you're getting into the later rounds and you're the longer fighter and you're tired, you find it a lot harder to get the power off when you're in short distance.
Yeah.
Petr Yan don't have that problem. He can get the power off at long distance. Yeah, he might have to overextend more, but if you're tired anyway, he's already a fast little bugger. So,
and he's also got that amazing, like, just killer cardio where he doesn't get tired.
Yeah, well, that's it. With his boxing back, because a lot of people forget about that. With him coming into mixed martial arts, he could have been a professional boxer. And in boxing, you are. It's a lot of shoulder cardio. You're throwing a lot of hands, and you're doing a lot of cardio. You don't have to worry about all else. But with him coming into mixed martial arts, his wrestling is absolutely on point. Corey Sandhagen, a lot of people were saying who were watching the fight were saying that they were surprised that Corey Sandhagen weren't trying for a hell of a lot more takedowns. So he didn't try and make it into a dogfight, but if I had to say to them people, he tried for the takedowns, but he couldn't really get them. Yeah. Petr Yan's takedown defence were just, it were on point. You couldn't take him down.
It's because he's got that low centre of gravity.
Yeah, and in my opinion, if you're going to beat Petr Yan, you're going to have to knock him out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be scarier against Aljamain for the second time, because not only is he pissed off that he'd lost the belt, and he can only be pissed off at himself, but he's definitely pissed off for it. He's pissed off that Aljamain still had pulled up for the second time. He's pissed off he had to fight someone who...
For an interim belt.
Yeah, for an interim belt, which he knows in his head that it means fuck all.
It's plastic.
And not only that, it means fuck all, because don't take me the wrong way, I love Corey Sandhagen, but the only reason he got the fight is because TJ Dillashaw had to have surgery and turned down the fight, so he accepted it, and you would do. At the end of the day, you're coming off a loss, then you get offered an interim title fight, you'd be fucking stupid not to accept it. But he didn't do anything to like where it would, and it was the second chance he got at the UFC title. That's rare, especially in this day and age. It's hard enough to get one fucking crack at the belt, let alone two, especially in the 21st century. And you'd think most fighters, especially in my opinion of being a fighter, I'd want to go out on my shield. I wouldn't be taking the back step. I wouldn't be moving. I'd be going straight forward. If Petr Yan wanted a dog fight, and I knew that was probably my last chance at winning that fight, I'd be turning that into a dogfight. I'd be taking cracks, even though he's a smaller fighter. If he knocked me out, he knocked me out. Mm-hmm. But at least I knew in that fight, I basically gave my all enough to try and get that belt, and I knew I weren't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Corey Sandhagen, like John Anik said, probably won't be the last time these two fight. Yeah, but it probably won't
be any different in terms of result.
Because of Corey Sandhagen, he just can't push that. He's lost to Aljamain Sterling, and he lost clean to Aljamain Sterling. And Petr Yan absolutely battered Aljamain Sterling. Petr Yan shown that he was better than Corey Sandhagen tonight. But the way you were able to beat him and how dominant you were, it's just, as soon as he fights Sterling again, he's gonna get the belt, mm-hmm. and he's gonna be pissed off from doing it for the
and
long streak of shit
for a long time.
Yeah, through the long streak of shit he's had to go through to basically get back to this point.
Yeah, and you mentioned there about fighters not always getting a second bout at a title contention, the main event, someone who we've always championed here on Five Rounds. Against someone else who we've always championed as well. This was like a really hard fight for us to pick a favourite in, but we absolutely adore Glover Teixeira.
Yeah.
From his struggles in getting into UFC in the first place, I mean, we knew of him, of his time in Brazil, from his debut, from him working his way to a title shot, and then thinking he's old, he's probably not going to do it again. And then he just went and was amazing for the best part of 2 years. Finally gets his way back to a title match, and this was the last bat at the cherry for someone like Teixeira. 42 years old, his birthday was a couple of days ago, taking on Blachowicz, who was literally just destroyed, unbeaten, Israel Adesanya. It wasn't looking good for him, but he pulled it off.
He definitely pulled it off, especially when it coming into the fact that the reason why I'm happy about the result is the reason why I were happy when Jan won the belt. He's been in the UFC a long time. I wanted him to win the belt, so at least
fights he's had in the UFC.
Yeah, so at least if he did pick up the belt, he could retire at some point and then go, at least I were the champion. In this case, I'm happy for the same reason. I'm happy for Glover Teixeira. He's been in the UFC for a fucking absolutely long time. Mm-hmm. A long time. And I'm just glad after all the crap he somewhat went through, the ups and the downs in the UFC, that he were able to actually pick up the belt. And but don't get me wrong, he had me worried in that fight. So did Blachowicz, because when I was watching the fight, I was thinking to myself, like, oh shit, who do I actually want to win? But then I was getting a bit like worried for both of them, because when it was like Glover got hurt or Blachowicz got hurt, I was worried for both of them. I'm like, get out of it, but one of them had to win. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm glad he won, because at least at 42 year old, he's not going to have a long run. You can tell his body has already been through some wars. As soon as he would basically got up, as soon as Blachowicz hit him with that uppercut, I just have flashbacks of fucking Rumble Johnson. I'm like, shit, no, here we go. His basically second chance, he's gone. But then he just pulled it out the bag. Well, Mum said to me earlier about basically like, oh, it was good of him going for a takedown like early into the first round, weren't it? Didn't you?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Cheers for that, Hannah. No,
just yeah.
I've just been listening to you both, and it's just like. Backwards and forwards.
This was probably the best we've ever seen Glover Teixeira. I know he went on a mad run to get a title shot in the first place, and then once he lost to Bones, he kind of like fell off a little bit, and then has beaten the likes of Anthony Smith on the way back to title contention. But this was a fucking performance.
Oh, brilliant.
From minute one, when he took down Blachowicz, controlled him for a full round on the floor, just absolutely dominated him. Then the second round, took a few jabs. We know he's got a chin like Granick anyway, but then rocks Blachowicz. He's able to land some big shots, get the takedown. And Blachowicz said that the submission was on the neck. It wasn't on the neck, not from the camera angle I was seeing. It was cranking on that jaw, and it looked absolutely brutal. But Blachowicz tapped pretty quickly. And you said you think that Blachowicz was already hurt. Probably from the big shot that wobbled him.
Yeah, definitely. Because he didn't seem to be all there in the first place. Now, not taking anything away from Glover Teixeira. Glover Teixeira had the perfect game plan. Why would you fight someone whose nickname is a Polish power on the feet? You've got your full cardio's there, your gas tank's still full, you're both dry because you hadn't had to basically work for 5 minutes, so there's no sweat on the body. So as soon as you grab your opponent and take him down to the ground, you've already got our success that it's going to work out anyway, especially when you're Glover Teixeira and you've got that experience to take someone down, especially when they're dry and you've got hold of them. They're basically going to find it hard to basically stop the takedown. That's why Jan Blachowicz, in the first round, found it easier to keep Glover where he were, mm-hmm. keeping him in full guard. Because yeah. even though it worked to Glover's advantage, taking him down and controlling there for 5 minutes, beating him up, and that can opener that he were doing to him when he was... I've done it to a couple of people in the gym just to basically show him that they can't just stay in that position, because even in that position, you're going to get put in a horrible fucking position, what you don't like. And especially when Glover were putting the hands behind the head and pulling down, as in like a neck crank, pulling the chin into the chest. And because he were in full guard, he were basically folding him up. And Blachowicz did not like that. And it's a horrible position to be in. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I've done it to certain people in the gym to show him, especially the ones who use, oh, I'm in full guard now, I'm comfortable, I don't need to do anything now, I can just hand fart from here. It's like, no, you can't. You can still get tapped out from here. And Glover is that high leveled where he was able to do that to Blachowicz. And Blachowicz, you can tell that he didn't have that done to him like a lot, because he weren't stopping it the first time, the second time, the third time, or the fourth time. You could tell it was something new, to where it was like, shit, it's happening again. Yeah. Panic.
Stop hitting me, it's really painful.
Yeah. Oh, a humble guy though. As soon as after the first round went, he looked up to him and went, that shows you've won one. Yeah. He knew straight away as a champion that that round with Glover's. Glover did the perfect thing that you could do in a championship bout the second time. Take the striker down, control it for 5 minutes, try and wear the confidence down, try and get your confidence up, and then the second round try and do exactly the same. Now, Blachowicz, he's weren't the champion for no reason. He didn't get took down as easy in the second round. He knew that he could get for the double unders, get the butterfly guard that he did up against the cage. He knew not to get, basically, let Glover lock the hands, mm-hmm. and he were able to get some good takedown defence. But Glover Teixeira, like I always say with Khabib, just because he might not get the takedown the first time doesn't mean them other 20 tries he's going to do, he ain't going to take you down. He's going to try and take you down no matter how many takedowns it basically takes. And as soon as he takes you down, you're going to find it hard to get back up.
And he did.
Yeah, definitely. And as soon as he were hurt, you could tell as soon as basically Glover like caught him and wobbled him, you could tell not only were Black, and I won't say worried or scared, because he's Blachowicz, he weren't. You could tell he were just more, oh, we're expecting this, I expect to get took down, but the power he's got, I basically weren't expecting that as well. So he somewhat shrunk up because he didn't know if the takedown were coming or if the strikes were coming. So he didn't know whether to defend his face or defend for like to sprawl. He didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. He did the Khabib game where he'll basically throw a wild strike at you and then just level change like that without you even knowing. And you're scrambling and you're confused and you're still defending the strikes that were basically coming a second ago.
Yeah.
And that's what Glover did perfectly. And as soon as he went down and took the back, and I could somewhat understand where he was saying it weren't on the neck. It was definitely on the chin, the front of the chin, because you could see it basically going in, and that's a horrible position as it was. And I guarantee that's why he tapped as quickly as he did. Feel like someone breaking your jaw and squeezing your jawbone into your skull. It's horrible. But then with Glover being on the side of the neck as well, cutting
the pressure on him.
Yeah, you could tell that not only were it crushing the chin into his face, it were also crushing the neck from sideways. So it were not only were getting his face broken, it were getting he couldn't breathe at the same time. So that's why he taps. So I've been in that position myself. I've been. It's horrible. You do want to tap. You don't want to be in that for long. No. As soon as you get put in that, you're like, fucking let go of me now.
But it means Glover Teixeira finally at the top of the tree, probably UFC's flagship division, and I couldn't be any happier for him.
Definitely. I seen a retweet saying who's next for Glover now. In my personal opinion,
he called one out.
Who?
He called out Jiří Procházka.
Who?
The Czech guy. The guy was going to be the make weight if
I know, yeah, I know exactly who you're about.
Who are you thinking of? Because I think Prochaska's got to be up there for.
I don't think he'll know one. I don't think he'll retire.
What?
Retire. Win the belt and retire. Literally, he's had a career that you could write a book off, and the ups and downs, and then 42 year old, the oldest champion in the UFC. And your gloves up as champion. You don't lose your belt.
Or you face Anthony Lev.
Well, yeah. One defence is better than no defences. But at 42 year old, I don't think no one can fucking hold it against you.
No.
Like Emmett Udo, for instance. The amount of people that held it against him because he retired at what? 30-odd-year-old being a double champion. Robert Teixeira, if he picked up this belt and retires at 42-year-old, his body's been... A lot of people need to understand that biomechanically, his body's fucked. His body's absolutely fucked. You could... He probably won't say it, but I guarantee he's even his toes are... Like, just for the amount of training camps he's been through, the amount of Brazilian jiu-jitsu he's done growing up, you can tell that his back hurts every time he moves an inch. Mm-hmm. So if he were to retire as champion, I wouldn't be mad. I think that would be a perfect, literally, story ending.
I mean, he did call out Jira, and Jira seemingly accepted. So
which is fair enough.
We'll see what happens.
I believe he takes him down and chokes him out just exactly the same.
Yeah,
and then retires.
Yeah, so before we get into next week's event, first I want to say thank you, Lorraine, for agreeing to be on the show. What did you think of the card as a whole? Did you have fun?
Yeah, it was really good, but I just like scraps, proper scraps, like...
What she says about scraps is, what she means is like, when you see videos of like the travellers going around on social media and all that YouTube, and they're absolutely having a bare knuckle boxing, basically. That's what she likes to watch. But what she don't realise is, 20 odd year ago, they made that unsafe, and only now people are bringing it back, just because in mixed martial arts they've lost a couple of brain cells and they thought, tell you what's a good idea, I'm going to take these 4 ounce gloves off that only give me no protection in first place, I'm just going to twat people with my bare knuckles.
Yeah.
Now they've got no brain cells, so yeah, that's what she means by she likes to watch proper scraps.
Likes blood and knockouts.
Yeah, like
buff 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 there. I was hoping for that sound effect. But yeah, again, thanks for coming on the show, we appreciate it. I'm sure you'll be back. Never. So next week we've got another numbered pay-per-view, this time a standard time for you Americans, and again another double title matches with Rose, both actually rematch as well.
Yeah,
it's Nami Yunus against Weili Zhang and Colby Covington.
I hope there's no title changes. I just thought there's no title change.
I mean, I wouldn't mind Weili Zhang being champion. I thought she's good as a champion, but I just like Rose.
I like Rose too much.
Can't stand Colby. Can't stand
him. He's a prick.
And he's taking on Kamaru Usman, so tune in next week for that. But from me, Podfather Mags on Twitter, for Carlos here, Kirby_Carlos, and for Lorraine on Facebook, I suppose.
You're okay.
That's all from here at Five Rounds. Definitely go check out the rest of the content on the networks that we are available on. That's Vision News Global Media, The Chair Shot, and Radio Techers. Thank you all for listening along, and that is the end.
Adios, amigos.
Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.